Show them, girl!
Little Jubilee, doe-eyed, a smile frozen on her face, started performing a mechanical, hip-gyrating dance, more appropriate to a woman twice her age, and a woman who wasn't 6 months pregnant. In that instant, Dr. Mildred Wyeth would have shot somebody dead if she'd known who to shoot. Raised in the second half of the 20th century, when civilization was at its peak, she found many parts of the new reality difficult, if not impossible, to stomach. Where there were no laws to defend the weak invariably suffered. But of course, suffering was a relative term, as was exploitation. And in Deathlands, there was always something worse. Always. At least the girl looked well-nourished, and there were no obvious bruises or scars on her arms or breasts.
Jubilee's only been married the once. She's hardly even broken in.
What about the one in her belly?
That goes along as part of the deal. Isn't that right, Pilgrim Wicklaw?
Someone in the center of the bank of folding seats called out,
I'm trading all my claim.
As the bearded man scanned the audience for takers, he spotted Ryan and Christy first, then Mildred and J.B.
Glory to Bob and Enid. We have guests.
Everyone turned in their seats to see, and upon seeing, stood up. For Mildred, staring down a couple of hundred people with just a six-shooter and a pocketful of grenades, was a moment to remember.
Well, I've got a better chance than my dad ever had.
Once again, the lost are found, guided out of the desert by the hand of Providence. Strangers, we are bound to welcome you, even as we ourselves were welcomed. Praise Bob, praise Enid!
Oh, great. A bunch of fucking moonies.
When the clamor subsided, the bearded man waved the crowd back to their seats and gestured for the newcomers to approach the stage.
Come on up here. Let's get ourselves properly introduced.
We'll stay right where we are.
Where they were was in control of all the exits, with blasters in hand, but the audience seemed too excited to notice. The bearded man didn't seem to care either. Without pause, he proceeded with the introductions.
I'm Pilgrim Plavik. Pilgrim Wicklaw, stand up. Pilgrim
the men
Master,
rose as he spoke each of
Pilgrim
their names.
Denison.
They reminded Mildred
Pilgrim
of heavyweight
Artis,
boxers, club
Pilgrim
fighters,
Matthews.
Not contenders, their brows, ears, and cheeks scarred from years of hand-to-hand combat. Like the men on stage, they were dressed in floor-length, homemade sackcloth. They all wore their beards and hair untrimmed. Pilgrim Wicklaw's hair hadn't been combed for so long that it had turned into a lopsided mass of brown felt. A single, nasty dreadlock. Seated around each of the men were lots of women, with lots of young children. Pilgrim Plavik didn't bother to introduce any of the women, and Mildred couldn't help but notice the way they beamed up at the men. In her experience, every remote population enclave in Deathlands had its own social structure, a product of isolation and grim necessity. Mildred was already getting a picture of the new little pueblo, a picture she didn't like, but was all too familiar with. From the seating arrangement and the adoring looks, all the females and children belonged to the half-dozen pilgrims, which left more than 100 single men in the back rows and aisle. They didn't get introduced either. Lean and furtive, they looked like whipped dogs, grinning whipped dogs. From the family groupings and the sheer size of the successful husbands, Mildred figured the single guys weren't getting any, except maybe from each other.
I'm called Ryan. This is Christy, and Mildred and J.B. are on the other side. We're pleased to meet you.
Ryan didn't see fit to mention Doc and Jack, who were waiting for his signal in the darkness just inside the exit doors.
Welcome to Little Pueblo, one and all.
The pilgrims took this as their cue to sit down, all but Wicklaw, who remained on his feet, his gaze shifting back and forth between Christy on the left and Mildred on the right. His interest made Mildred's skin crawl.
As a gesture of respect and friendship, Ryan, in the name of Bob and Enid, I offer you a trade.
There was neither respect nor friendship in Wicklaw's crafty, squinty-eyed smile.
I'll swap my wife Jubilee there for your dark one. Straight across trade. You keep the baby.
J.B. looked back at Mildred and winked. She scowled at him. It wasn't funny. Not by a long shot. Wicklaw pointed at Mildred.
Hey, dark lady, come down here and sit beside me so we can get better acquainted. Jubilee, go on, go to him, girl.
The child mother started for the stage steps, eyes full of dread.
Fuck that, mister.
Hold on right there, Jubilee.
The girl stopped in mid-step, looking to her hulking brute of a husband for direction. But Pilgrim Wicklaw was already pushing his way out of the row of chairs. Mildred hadn't moved an inch in his direction, so he was coming to her. Up close, he was even bigger, more like a super heavyweight. His hair and beard looked like he'd been asleep in a cave for 4 or 5 months. From his expression, he had awakened pissed off. His sweat reek was monumental, almost stratified.
I treat my wives good. You're never gonna do better than me. Go on, ask the others.
Over in the Wicklaw family's seats, his 5 spouses were smiling and nodding in eager agreement.
A goddamn polygamy pep squad.
Mildred thought about telling him how old she was chronologically, but knew he'd never believe it.
Sorry, but I'm not the marrying kind.
Wicklaw moved toe-to-toe with her, leaning over, trying to intimidate her with his size and strength. He didn't notice that she held her double-action ZKR aimed at the instep of his booted right foot. She was holding her breath to avoid taking in the big bastard's stink, all the while thinking, one in the foot, one in the balls, and one between the eyes.
You're wrong about that, Mildred. You just never had a real man take care of you. You're gonna love every minute of it, I swear by Bob and Enid.
When Wicklaw put his calloused hand heavily on her shoulder and squeezed, J.B. moved in. He jammed the barrel of his 12-gauge against the base of the man's spine, between the top of his buttocks.
Take a step back from her, Pilgrim, or you'll never walk again.
It was a triple-stoop thing to do under the circumstances, but Mildred loved him for it. Wicklaw backed away, his hands raised.
This can't be good.
Doc and Jack stepped out of the shadows, their blasters up. Plavik raised his arms.
Stop it now! Stop it right now! Remember, these folks just got here. They've been through a lot. They don't understand our ways.
What matters is that they follow custom from the minute they set foot here. What's right is right, praise Bob.
At the right is right bit, everybody in the theater stood up, purple face outraged that newcomers had dared to challenge the rules they lived by. There were no blasters showing. Given odds of better than 30-1, they didn't need them. The men, women, and older children started to push into the aisles with bloody murder in their eyes.
Wait a fire-blasted minute!
Ryan pulled a fragger from his pocket and, holding the safety lever down, yanked the ring pin. Push had come to shove.
Shit!
Mildred and J.B. followed Ryan's lead, holding armed explosive devices up for all to see. With primed frags at every corner of the room, the crowd froze. It got very quiet in the El Mirador. Seconds passed, and the stalemate stretched on and on. No one questioned the companions' resolve to use the grins. No one dared call their bluff. But the youngest kids were already beginning to fidget and whimper. Something had to give. Good, bad, or ugly. Ryan broke the awful silence. He turned to Pilgrim Wicklaw.
Isn't there another way for a real man to settle this?
Traitor Blade! Traitor Blade!
It is the custom here to work out our trading disputes with cold steel, one-on-one.
Ryan knew the people of Little Pueblo might not honor the outcome of the fight if he came out on top, but it was the only chance to avoid a wholesale slaughter of the women and children. There was nothing to lose by trying.
Until the fight's over, nobody moves. Your people stay in their seats. My people stay where they are.
That is agreed.
Ryan slipped the ring pin back in the gren, repocketed it, then unslung his stire and handed it over to Christy.
If I go down, frag them.
He's the one going down, lover. Going down hard.
Though there was confidence in her voice, her muted hair had drawn up into a mass of tight, anxious ringlets.
And if the Vilfolk don't like it?
Frag them.
Pilgrim Plavik quickly waved the girls off the stage and then waved for the 2 would-be combatants to come up and join him. Ryan and Wicklaw mounted the stage from opposite sides and walked to its center, where Plavik waited.
The rules are there are no rules. Last man standing is the winner, however long that takes.
Wicklaw was staring down at Ryan's black eye patch and scar, turning his big blocky head this way and that to take in the view from every angle. As he did so, an ugly grin peeked through the tangle of his beard. He pointed to Ryan's lost eye.
Looks like you already lost a knife fight, Ryan. This one's gonna last 3 minutes, tops. Then I'm gonna take that eye you got left.
Huh. Ryan didn't rise to the bait. He stared back with that expression, willing to let his panga do all the talking.
All right. Both of you step back now.
Plavik spread his arms wide to separate them. He waited until the two men were 10 feet apart.
Blades out!
Wicklaw slashed at the air with the cruel 2-foot-long quarter moon of razor-sharp steel. The hook-like blade of the scythe gathered in and sliced all in one motion, using the weight and inertia of whatever was being harvested to make clean, sweeping cuts. In combat, it was no stabbing tool, but it could make deep wounds to muscle and sever blood vessels and tendons, incapacitation leading up to the killstroke. Ryan drew his own weapon from its leg sheath. The panga was 18 inches of tempered, pre-dark vanadium steel. Longer than a bowie knife and shorter than a short sword, it had a steel crossguard and pommel. With its heavy-backed blade, an expert knife fighter could cut through a 1-inch diameter bone with a single swipe. Although it could be used for stabbing, it had a razor point and deep blood gutters along both sides of the blade. Because of its weight and balance, the panga was primarily a hacking weapon, designed to produce massive cleaving wounds to flesh and bone.
When I drop my arm, the fight is on.
Right.
Got any last words, One Eye?
Wicklaw shifted his weight easily from one foot to the other. Ryan had no words, last or otherwise. Nor did he have a fighting plan, a strategy that anyone else would have recognized. Knife fighting was instinctive, reactive. Because of the speed of attack and counterattack, it bypassed thinking and logic. If he does this, I'll do that. And moved into a much more primitive and mysterious realm. Some blade masters visualized positive and negative energy flowing back and forth between them and their adversaries. As much as possible, Ryan visualized nothing. He emptied his mind, preparing it to receive whatever came his way. Wicklaw, on the other hand, thought he had his game plan all worked out. A seasoned fighter, he had undoubtedly hamstrung dozens of inept opponents by going for the heels right off the bat.
Glory of Bob and Eden!
When Plavik dropped his arm, that's exactly what Wicklaw did. He hopped forward, squatting low, reaching out and sweeping his arm through a short arc that hooked the blade behind Ryan's feet. Ryan jumped in the air to avoid the strike, and as he did, he lashed out with his right boot. A solid blow that jarred Ryan all the way to his hip. Wicklaw felt it too. He tumbled away. Before Ryan could close and strike with the panga, the big man had rolled to his feet. Pinkish blood oozed from his neck. The snap kick had ripped out a 3-inch square patch of his beard. The hairball was stuck in the lugs of Ryan's boot sole, along with a strip of skin. Wicklaw smiled as if it didn't hurt. So it must have. They began circling and feinting.
I eat sissy little pussies like you for lunch. Just ask your wife.
Ryan ignored the taunts. The stage was a blank rectangle. There were no curtains, no ropes, no furniture, nothing to throw or fight behind. As Ryan moved around and around, he maintained eye contact with Wicklaw, but he wasn't just seeing the eyes. He was taking in the whole package at once, shoulders, arms, hips, legs. Wicklaw was light on his feet for someone so big, and with his ape-like arms, he had the reach advantage, even with Ryan's 18-inch blade. Wicklaw tried another strategy, something that had worked for him before, no doubt. He suddenly charged, windmilling with the scythe, trying to knock Ryan off balance or back him into a corner. Ryan pivoted away at the last second, timing the move to duck past the down-slashing blade. As the steel point brushed his back, he hacked behind the man's knee, putting all his weight and spin momentum into the downward blow. Huh? Wicklaw jumped away. The panga had put a wide tear in the back of his robe, which made the hem drag on the floor. There was no blood. And from the way Wicklaw moved, no injury. As his opponent turned, Ryan glimpsed something dull and metallic through the hole in the fabric.
What's wrong, One Eye? You look surprised.
The big man came at him again. This time the furious charge was accompanied by waist-high, forehand-backhand slashes of the scythe. Ryan feinted a retreat, then parried and struck, bringing the panga's sweet spot down on the man's right thigh, just above and perpendicular to the knee. The clash of steel on steel reverberated up his arm, and the panga bounced off its target. The blow made Wicklaw groan, but it should have done way more than that. It should have severed the bone in his leg, or failing that, clipped off his kneecap. The big man sidestepped, limping slightly, keeping his blade moving to prevent a follow-up attack. Again, there was no blood on the robe, no blood on the floor. Through the big slash in the front of the robe, Ryan could see what the problem was. He imagined Wicklaw's wives sitting around the fire of a winter's night, dutifully cutting, bending, pounding together the steel strands for their hubby's chainmail leggings.
You're gonna have to do better than that, One-Eye.
He did. Ryan moved right, lunging toward Wicklaw. As the big man tried to cut him with a backhanded swipe, he ducked under the blow and shifted the panga to his left hand.